Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Changing Times, the Alan Wood Conversations.
Proudly supported by Kildare County Council.
I had this overwhelming sense of failure. No one was probably thinking it, but in my head being like, oh, she didn't make it, of course. Like, look at her. So I think that really then led on to me developing a full-on, consistent purging and then anorexia. Even saying the word anorexia, I think at the time I would have been like, God, no, I don't have that. But actually looking back.
Well, it's a lovely, lovely day here in Allenwood in County Kildare. The summer has arrived, maybe for 24 hours or so. I know you travelled down from your home in Roscommon, Mary. How was that?
Do you know, it was an easy enough journey, but what's lovely, even though it's a little bit exasperating, is to see the tractors back out on the road again and the farm life coming to life again, because they've had a tough time and they're all out grasping whatever opportunities it offers. So I can't say that I was complaining about being stuck behind a couple of tractors on the way down. I was actually glad to see them.
You know, I was talking to our producer, Enda, earlier about this little village that we record in, and we were talking about the fact that Allenwood has changed quite a bit in the recent past, but it still retains the charm and the character. And there's a nice blend of tradition and adaptation, I suppose. Rural Ireland as a whole is changing and evolving rapidly, isn't it?
It is. I take my own little rural road, a very quiet little backwater between Carrick and Shannon and Coote Hall, about which, incidentally, that film that They May Face the Rising Sun is about that lake shore, that area. So, and I'm delighted to see that they have done so well.
Yeah, they will lift us.
But actually, our little road now, with so many people moving from the big metropolises to live in the countryside, people from Leitrim and Roscommon and Mayo who are going home, started with COVID, they're now living and maybe commuting or doing a little bit of work from home. Our road's become a rat run.
We're moving west.
We're about, I suppose, about a mile in from the main road. Take you 5 minutes trying to get a space to get out. Mm-hmm. And that's new. That's all kind of COVID and post-COVID.
Yeah. Yeah.
The traffic now showing the changing demographic. I'm delighted to see things like our local school and Gaelic Football Club, and particularly Carrick and Shannon, which is easily one of the loveliest towns in Ireland, doing so well. Mm-hmm. And they are doing well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like to see the life about the place. Yeah. I'm not going to complain about it.
Yeah, I think it's nice. It's actually breathing new life into rural Ireland. And, you know, our guest today grew up in rural Tipperary in the shadow of Slievenamon, and she was reared on a farm which she said, not our words, was in the middle of nowhere. But from being a small girl in a small school, sixth in her class, to the bright lights of a hugely successful modelling career, now a content creator, radio presenter on 2FM, entrepreneur and a household name. You are very welcome to Allenwood, Roz Purcell.
Thank you to Mary's for having me.
Usher, look, it's great to see you again.
Yes.
Roz and I have a history.
That's true.
Did a walking program.
We did, yes.
During COVID, really, around the COVID time. Yeah. We did a walking program on your much-loved Slieve na Mann.
Yes, we did.
You took us up and down Slieve na Mann.
Will you ever forget that really steep hill at the end?
No, I won't. My hamstrings are still in a state of recovery.
Yeah,
it's all very well for you. You're a mountain goat. I'm just considerably older. Well, I'll never forget the sausage rolls that we got as well on our lovely picnic.
And that speaking was just, of which, look at the lovely cookies that you brought in.
She has arrived with the most absolutely delicious and very hard to resist, I have to say, biscuits with a lovely chocolate top. They're an orange biscuit. Mm-hmm.
Chocolate, salt, hazelnut and a little bit of orange.
They are beyond delicious.
They are lovely.
Because you know what? I was like, I'm not going to arrive empty handed. And I was like, I'm going to Google you both and find the common denominator of what food you both really like. Has no one ever asked you in interviews what your favourite treat or dessert is? I couldn't find anything online.
Yeah, there you go. We've kept it a state secret.
Neither of us resisted the cookies. They are gorgeous,
and they're planked right in front of us, which is really difficult.
For the next guest, what would be your ultimate treat or dessert? Like, what's your favourite thing to snack on?
Well, I love biscuits.
Okay, biscuits. Good with my biscuit choice.
Yeah,
it's
very good.
Yeah, I'm pretty much biscuits as well. Uh-huh. And if you went out of here and into our little kitchen, you would see we have probably close to an addiction to Tunnock's tea cakes.
Industrial supplies. Yeah.
I could get through those.
So biscuits or tea cakes, right?
And I love the fact, Roz, that these are vegan. My daughter is vegan, and is it okay if I bring her home one? Because she's going to want to taste these.
Please do, or else I will eat them all in the car on the way home.
The awful thing to say is they're vegan, but they don't taste vegan.
Yeah,
is that a terrible
vegan.
thing to say?
No, I think that's fair to say. As a vegan, that is very fair to say. And I think food kind of definitely brings people together. And obviously, as we said, I grew up in Tipperary, and it was the middle of nowhere. And to give that reference, we only got Wi-Fi like a year and a half, 2 years ago down there. It's quite deep in the valley. So a big part of my childhood was to keep busy by cooking and baking. Mm. And I really enjoyed it. You know, I'd get home from school and I'd be like, can I make a lemon souffle? And my parents were like, well, that's better than what most kids want to go do. So yes, you can. And obviously then exploring the outdoors. Yeah. So they were kind of our options growing up.
What kind of a farm was it, Roz?
So we grew up in a horse farm.
Oh.
We did have some bullocks. But then I think, look, anyone who's ever grown up on a farm with cows can relate. My fitness comes from herding and hunting cows, running after cows. So I got to stage, I think probably when I was maybe 15 or 16, my dad was like, I'm going to stop farming cows because it was a lot of stress. Mm-hmm. And we have horses. We still have a few horses now. A lot of them are just older racehorses, just kind of living out their best lives on the farm. And both my parents have retired. So it was kind of a mix of a farm. And it was a really nice spot underneath Slieve na Mann Mountain. Mm-hmm. And while I didn't enjoy it growing up, I can appreciate it now.
And were they eventers? Did they take the horses to competitions?
Yes. We went to the races most weekends. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if my parents were away quite a lot with horse racing, so I would spend, you know, then time with my aunties and my grandparents who lived close by as well. And they'd bring me up the mountain.
What did you learn from them?
My granny loved baking. Her house was right beside ours. It was a small bungalow for her and my grandfather just when they got older, they couldn't manage the stairs. And we kind of lived with them until I was maybe about 12 or 13 because they let us away with absolutely everything. And they taught me how to cook from such a young age. And I remember it was like being on MasterChef every evening. I cook the supper and my granddad would give his feedback. It was never good. Everything was
nuts.
No, but in a funny way, he'd always find something like the tea was too strong. So we'd make every element or the rashers were a little too crispy. But we loved it because, you know, then maybe once in a blue moon, once a year, he'd be like, that was perfect. And he'd be like, oh, thank God. But it was always perfect. He was just looking for something. And then when my grandparents passed away, my auntie kind of took over that role of really teaching us how to bake and cook. Mm-hmm. And she would come down every weekend and live in the little cottage. And yeah, we were super close to them. They taught us so much about food, but also they'd bring us to all the kind of Tipperary Camogie games every weekend and gave us that love of sport as well. And yeah, I was very lucky to have a lot of motherly figures growing up.
And one of your aunts died quite recently, didn't she?
Yes, she did. And that was Mary. She was a teacher in Carlow. And I'll never forget when I realised she was a business teacher and not a home ec teacher. The disgust. I was like, what?
She was a baker.
She was a baker. I couldn't believe that she was a business teacher. I was like, what are you doing? And we were extremely close with Mary. Her nickname was Mame. And yeah, she's just a huge part of our lives. So it was a really, really hard time last year when she passed away. Yeah. And it was quite sudden. But, you know, at least every time make one of her recipes or go for a walk and achieve them on, you can kind of remember her that way.
Yeah. And your mother was a school principal.
She was, and she was mine. So
oh,
you
she
can
was
imagine.
Yours?
You can imagine. Yes.
What did you call her in the school? Mummy?
No, Mrs. Purcell.
You called her mummy, Mrs. Purcell.
She laid the law down. She was a very strict principal. And
how many years did that go on for?
So I went to a very small primary school. It was only about 30 people. So there was really literally no hiding. So she did 4 years. And then I had another teacher for 4 years.
So you're,
but she was the overall principal.
She was Mrs. Purcell at school, which is a long day. Then you go home.
You know what? She wouldn't help me with any of my homework. No. She had that thing where she said, no, I'm done for the day. So poor dad was trying to work out maths. And I think back and I'm like, I should have just tried to do it myself.
And then did you switch kind of spontaneously to mum or mummy when you got home?
Yeah.
Was there any time when you got caught out and called her?
I think the reason I called her Mrs. Purcell in primary school is because I didn't want the other kids to kind of tease me like, mum. You know, that kind of way. So I was very conscious of what I was calling her. But yeah, she was very good at, I suppose, not treating us differently. I remember gathering everyone together on April Fool's when we went out for a little break. And at the time, the grass was quite long, so I hadn't started cutting it yet. And I said, everyone, they've gone in to get their lunch, hide. So when they come out, it looks like no one's here. So everyone hid. And my mum, like being quite a very strict principal, as soon as she rang the bell and she just went, everyone, get up. Everyone started running in. But I went, no, I'm not. Plus, I had actually hidden in her car, so I couldn't even hear anything was going on. She never came to get me. She just got in the car and drove home and she went, get out. So she just didn't pander to me, when I was being a little brat. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So you were a fun-loving youngster.
Yeah, I definitely, I was the youngest child, so I kind of tried to get away with as much as I could.
Mm. You weren't tempted by life on the farm as a career or being a teacher?
Neither, no. I think with being on the farm, growing up so young, having to do with the chores, it's a hard life. It's really, really tough. You know, when we'd wake up every day, we'd have a list of like the chores we had to do on the farm. I particularly remember, you know, sweeping the yard in autumn, and even as a child being like, they're going to be back tomorrow. But, you know, we always had a job. And even if it was a kind of a benign job, it was just to give us that kind of, I suppose, work ethic. So I just knew how hard it was to work in a farm. It didn't really tempt me at all. And then I guess being a teacher, I would just, even from as a teenager, I'd know I wouldn't have the patience for that. Mm-hmm. No. And I wasn't really book smart either.
Yeah.
So I didn't really see myself going down that
line.
And
yet you're a book writer.
Yes.
I know. Cookery books and hiking books. Maybe go on the element of a little bit more of photo books. Photo and a bit of narrating as well. So I do remember when I got my first book contract, I was like, my teachers in school won't believe it.
Were they shocked whenever your career took off down the road of modelling?
Yes.
It's funny, I think when I was so young when it started, when I was 18, I don't think I really had the concept of what anyone else thought of me. I was very much in my own head, if that makes sense. You know, when you're a teenager, you think the world revolves around you. You don't really see, you don't stop to look around and see how everyone else is absorbing the information or what they're going through. So I was always kind of, growing up, I was always kind of dressing up and coming down and putting on performances. And, you know, if we were having a party, I'd be like, would anyone like me to sing? I can't sing. Okay. Or, you know, do something. I probably liked, you know, putting on a show a little bit. So I think in that regard, they probably were like, oh, that's Roz. I've always kind of wanted to.
So did you pursue modeling?
No. So when I went to, when I was really young, I think about 16, I sent a photo into an agency, didn't get accepted, got a very brutal letter back.
Oh,
but
dear.
You know, when you're 16, you have great confidence. You're like, they don't see what I see. Okay, they have got this wrong. So anyway, I kind of kept going in secondary school, whatever. And I think luckily for me, I had this like really like, I would say yes to everything. I was really, really confident and not so much about what I looked like, but I just had this I think I really, really believed anything you wanted, you could really get it. So I kind of, that didn't deter me whatsoever. But then when I went to college, I really wanted to go up to Dublin to get into the big city and to just get away from the countryside, get away from Tipperary. And it was the first weekend I went to Dundrum Shopping Centre after a night out. So I'm pretty sure I was still in my skinny jeans, my big platforms. And an agent actually came up to me and was like, we're doing this competition at the moment. I kind of thought it was maybe a joke or it was a scam. But they actually were doing a competition. And it was, I can't even remember the name of it now. I was so young. It was like, I was literally just after turning 18. But it was some modeling competition to get a contract in America. Something like that. Ooh. And so I got to the final of it in Dublin. My whole family came up and didn't win it. Didn't deter me. I got signed to the Irish agency and that's how it started.
Wow.
So I grew up watching America's Next Top Model. And
oh, and did you love it?
Oh, I loved it. But then it's like I manifested too hard and it all became a reality. And next thing I knew, I was in America with a really good agency and they were chopping my hair into a bob and dyeing it red. And I was like crying. And, you know, I could never be small enough. And I found it just
pressure.
Absolutely. Oh, it was the most loneliness and isolation time of my life. And just, you know, I think the realization probably set in that I just wasn't built to actually be a model.
Mm-hmm. And we hear a lot of stories about harassment in that industry, abuse of young people, particularly young women in that industry. Did you experience that kind of thing?
Yeah, like I definitely, when I was modeling abroad, had really bad instances with men groping me and grabbing me in places and just, yeah, like really horrific circumstances.
How'd you handle that?
Well, I think I'm kind of like the real answer or they're very...
give us the real answer,
okay,
Ross.
Yeah. I had this really good strategy where I would start talking about my dad and how that they're the same age as you. You know, maybe for some people that's... Could you not have just gone, stop? I was so young. I'd definitely grown up with this appeasement of like, I could never really stand up for myself or, you know, because I was a model and these people were higher up, I couldn't... had this thing where I just had to be nice. So you could, my mom always said to me, you could say anything with a smile on your face. So I remember I used to just have this line where I go to and go, what age are you? And I'm like, my dad is the exact same age. Like, do you have any kids? Are you married? I'd start really talking about all that. So that was kind of my strategy, or just to kind of ignore it and just kind of like block out and just kind of try and move on.
And were you under pressure to not eat too much and to, you know, like, did they keep an eye on you? Your
Definitely.
Body shape and things?
Depending on the agency I was with. But my experience with it, because I was kind of, well, I was 20, 21, like I was fluctuating quite a lot with my weight. I didn't really understand what a healthy diet was. I wasn't really training consistently. And just, I think, matter of fact, I wasn't built to be that kind of generation of model. This was back around 2010. It was still that very small, size 6 frame that was kind of on trend. So I was constantly being measured.
Really?
Yeah. And I would lose weight and it would never be enough. And I tried to lose more. And my diet, when I look back at how I tried to do it, I was like, but I think I was so young, I didn't really have any money either that like I didn't know, could I go to, you know, a personal trainer or go to nutritionist? But I'm sure they would have said to me, you're just, you know, there's not much more you can do. I was running on empty, you know.
Did all of that pressure cause problems for you?
Well, definitely. So when I was modeling abroad, I had a really, really bad relationship with food and that I was binging and purging. So I would not eat for days and I would be, you know, I'm using inverted commas, I know this is a podcast, but be really good. And then I'd obviously get to a weekend or a day off and I'd eat everything because my body was craving it. I was so hungry. So I was binging and purging. I'd come home for a while, put on weight, and then I'd be like, oh, I have to go back abroad in 2 weeks, and I'd stop eating. So it was a really bad cycle of binging and purging. And then when I eventually decided to come home from modeling abroad, because there was a really bad incident with a horrible man when I was shooting abroad, that I think I just had this overwhelming sense of failure that I had failed as a model. I think at the time, there was lots of press being like, Roz Bristol goes off to try be an international supermodel. And I couldn't. I didn't do it. I didn't succeed. So when I got home and I started going back to those normal jobs, I had this overwhelming sense of failure of no one was probably thinking it, but in my head being like, oh, she didn't make it, of course. Like, look at her. You know, she isn't small enough. So I think that really then led on to me developing a full on consistent purging and then anorexia. And it's funny because even saying the word anorexia, I think at the time I would have been like, God, no, I don't have that. But actually looking back, I 100% did. My calorie count was so low that I was consuming. I was training 2-3 times a day. I had like constant heart palpitations. I remember going to the doctor all the time being like, there's something wrong with my heart. And, you know, them being like, maybe just step on the scales there, and being like, you know, you're really severely underweight. And I was like, no, I'm not. Just something. And I'd be getting all these like, you know, things put on my heart 24 hours. Cause I was like so conscious of my health as well, even though I was really unhealthy. Mm. And then I think it was driven as well by the time, like, you know, as I said, this was back 2010, 2012, where like it was very much applauded when a woman would lose weight or she'd, inverted commas, tone up. So I think a lot of people probably looked at me and went, oh, she's got such a great figure. And, you know, and I definitely contributed to the fact that, you know, I made it seem like I had this naturally when in fact I was in a severe, severe like calorie deficit and I was overtraining. But it became so normalized to me that I genuinely thought this is what everyone else did to be this small and be this toned. And like, I just think of like the absolute horror I put my body through, do you know? And that went on for a good few years. Even you, when you go to get fasted bloods by the doctor and they're like, you can't eat the morning. Oh, that's really hard. I'm like, I wake up and I'm like, 3 more hours, 2 more hours. I'm like, how did I do that for days on end?
How did you get over it then, Roz?
So it was, and just back to, I just do want to reference as well. It wasn't just coming home and having that huge sense of failure. There was also a whole lot of like the growth of social media as well, and getting really nasty messages about my weight at the time because it fluctuated. I do remember in particular there was this web page that like came out of nowhere that was set up, and I do think it was from kind of like almost pageant followers because I had done Miss Universe, that like a picture of me at Miss Universe versus a picture of me when I put on weight and the commentary around my weight fluctuation. And I just remember that being like, you have this overwhelming sense of like, everyone thinks this, even though it's just a couple of people re-commenting and coming back on this pylon. It really got to me. And I remember that as a really big moment that made me really take my eating disorder to the next level, if I'm being quite honest. So how I kind of managed to get out of that, for years, my family, particularly my older sister, Rebecca, had kind of tried to like, you know, drag me aside. I was really difficult. So anyone, if you have anyone in your life who's had an eating disorder, or you yourself has had one, like, it can be really hard to be around that person. And I look back and I'm like, oh God, I feel really terrible for the people who were with me doing things, because I kind of took the fun out of everything. And this is my experience with it. And I didn't mean to do that, but everything revolved around food and what weight I was. So if I was having a bad day, I took it out on everything around me. I couldn't enjoy anything. I would say no to holidays, to opportunities, to hang out with my friends, because I needed that control, that routine. And it must have been horrific to be in a relationship with me, because I was so, so caught up in like hating myself that, you know, I had very little room or very little space in my head to be nice. Not nice. There was moments I definitely was nice to people, but like I didn't have a lot of space in my head to think about others. That's really it.
I'd say your mum and dad were thinking about nothing but you all that time.
You know what? I think it's one of those things where it's probably only now in hindsight my parents look back and go, oh wow, like, you know, dieting that severely isn't normal. Because, you know, they were also in the society of like, you know, that whole thing of like women should be such a small size. And like, my dad's a good old proper farmer, like, you know, he just kind of keeps out of things, you know what I mean? And my mum also, you know, she'd be kind of someone, I suppose it's only really after, I remember when I did recover and talk about it, she kind of opened up herself, you know. So I think it's just one of those things, and I think a lot of people can understand, like, sometimes Irish parents, it's kind of that thing where it's changed now, but 10 years ago, people didn't really talk about things that much. So what really kind of helped me get out of it was, my sister had been kind of saying it to me for years, because I do specifically remember an event we went on holidays together, and she just burst into my room and went, shook me and was like, you need to just like basically cop on now. Look, she would probably say herself, probably not the right way to go about it. Yeah. But I remember kind of getting this like, oh, everyone does notice. Like, you know, it was kind of the first time someone was like, your behavior is not okay. Mm-hmm. And we know you've something going on with you, but like it's affecting everything else around you. It was like a weed. I was just spreading like everything. So I kind of tried to go get help, but I wasn't ready. And I do think there's a huge thing of like when someone's not ready to recover from something, like I didn't know who I was without my eating disorder. I had it so long. It was a huge part of my life. It was kind of like this other voice in my head that I didn't really know who I'd be without it. And I was afraid to let it go because I felt like this was the best version of myself. People liked me being this shape, being this small. So if I let that go, I wouldn't have anything left. So I had tried to get help just to kind of tick a box and tell everyone, you know, I'm getting help, but I'd no intention of actually changing my ways. Until my sister, now I was probably about 25, turning 26 at the time, my sister who was 28, she's 3 years older than me, got diagnosed with chronic myeloid leukemia. We were living together at the time in Dublin. We were best friends.
Yeah.
They stressed us the same growing up. She came home one day and she was crying. She had just gone to the doctor and got a very quick diagnosis of leukemia, which was really shocking because she's so young to get something like that. And it was probably the first time, because me and my sister were so close, mm-hmm. we're best friends. First time I wasn't thinking of myself. And I feel embarrassed to say that it took me by the age of 25 to actually not be so consumed by myself. But, you know, that is part of an eating disorder. It was the first time I really, really was just not thinking about food, not thinking about my body, not thinking about what size I was. All those worries, my own internal worries were gone. I was just worried about her. And then going to appointments with her over the coming months and kind of finding out what type of leukemia she has and kind of, I suppose, dealing with all the treatment she was going to. I was going along with her. I realized, like, I think it started to strike me about body functionality and like how important it is to look after your body. And your body does so much for you every single day that we just take for granted, you know. And I think one big thing I remember the doctor saying, like, you've probably had this cancer a year and a half and your body's just been fighting it off, that you've been able to live a completely normal life. Mm. So, you know, it was just a big changing moment for me, being like, I am literally doing the worst thing possible for my body. I'm not eating. I'm training the whole time. I don't feel well. Like, I'm constantly having to take naps because I had no energy. Oh. And, you know, like, I was tiny.
So you learned to love your body.
Yeah, I wasn't getting periods. You know, I was like, just not, my body wasn't functioning normally, you know. I had like big, long hair extensions, but without them, my hair had completely shriveled away. So that really kind of made me go, oh, actually, I do want to get better. I really do want to get better. I don't want to waste any more time because I don't know when my time is going to be up. No one does. And I don't want to waste any more time feeling this horrible about myself. And just, you know what, missing out on life. I just felt like the most important thing for me every single day was to get smaller. So I just really focused on getting better.
You describe that illness really, really well, Roz. You really do.
Well, you know what? I think it's probably different for everyone, but my experience with it is it was like someone just had taken me over.
Yeah.
And then when I eventually got help, and obviously it's not like you're fixed. It takes a long time and it's something I still have to kind of manage. You know, now and again, I find if I'm really run down or I'm doing too much work, I start to feel bad about myself. I start, you know, having those thoughts again, but I'm much quicker to catch them and not to let them take over. 3.5 years really to kind of get back to myself. I remember my sister saying, it's like the Roz returned, like the Roz we knew at 18, 19 is back.
And yet during those years, an observer from outside seeing you as, you know, Ireland's contestant in Miss Universe, having this modelling career all over the world, New York, Las Vegas, would have thought, oh my God, you're living the gilded golden life.
Yeah. And I think that was the hard thing as well, because I missed out so much of like my fun college years and, you know, going out with my friends and things like that. Like I just went straight into living this very obscure life and people probably thought I was having the best time when actually I was just really lonely and I didn't really fit in with all the other models. And there was definitely an element of like, you know, there was a hierarchy of models. It was not a great time. And you know what? I definitely perpetuated that because I wanted people to think that I was living that great life as well, you know. But in reality, I was so miserable.
Changing Times, the Alan Wood Conversations.
Proudly supported by Kildare County Council.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And what about Miss Universe? Because like that was a moment and you represented Ireland.
I still get tagged in videos. Like Miss Universe culture is huge. I went to Thailand with my sister, okay? We get off a flight, like what, a 9-10 hour flight. My sister's the type of person to go straight into the shower, blow dry her hair, look glamorous, feel good. I'm just like, nah, I'll do that later. Have my hair in like a big scraggly bun, no makeup on. I look like a melted welly. We go into this restaurant and there's a Filipino waiter who comes over and went, he looks at my sister and went, oh my God, Miss Universe Ireland 2010. And she just goes, no, that's her. And he looked right at me and I went, could you not have just pretended it was you? Because I looked so bad. But I did really enjoy it. It was extremely intense. And I'm really glad I went for it.
Mm-hmm.
But would I do it now? Absolutely not. It's not me at all.
What would the 6 or 8 or 10 year old Roz have said if somebody had said, what are you going to be doing now when you grow up, Roz? What would you have said?
I would have said, I'm going to be a cooker. So that's what I used to always say to my Auntie Mary. She used to say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I'd go, a cooker. And she'd go, that's an appliance.
Well, you have done.
You're
my goodness.
From, yeah.
From having an eating disorder to celebrating food, yeah, and making good food is just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
What a journey.
You know what? Sorry, just let people know I did bring my dog.
Yeah,
so if you hear the pitter
patter, good as gold.
If you hear the pitter patter, that is Wilco coming over to stretch his legs. Yeah, and you know what? It's funny how I've really returned to the things I probably thought were mundane as a child, cooking and hiking. You know, for me, hiking was like, oh, I'm going to go for a run to escape the house and doing work. My parents just kind of liked to keep us busy. So mm-hmm. as long as we were doing something, they were okay with mm-hmm. that. So, you know, growing up, if I wanted to meet a boy, I'm going for a walk in the woods. And, you know, our date would be going for a hike in the mountain. So it was kind of what we did. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 3 cookbooks. Now The Hike Life, mm-hmm. which was voted best lifestyle book of the year, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it
congratulations
was.
Congratulations on that.
I have to say, I think winning a book award is up there with one of the greatest achievements so far, because...
And it is a great achievement.
Yeah,
it is.
You know what?
And
like,
it's a gorgeous book.
I've gone to the book awards so many times and I've always felt going into that room so out of my element, and I always felt like I could never write a book. So to actually win an award there was really overwhelming. It was absolutely incredible. And, you know, it's only now and again when someone mentions it, I'm like, yes, I did. I did win a book award. I'm really, really excited and happy about that.
But the book is fabulous.
Thank you,
Roz. And the hikes are there. And the photographs are there. I mean, it must have taken a huge amount of time to actually do the walk and then take the photographs. And
about 2.5 years. So I pitched the idea to a lot of book publishers. No one would bite because full colour books, you know, kind of are hard sell. A lot of people kind of just wanted me to just write a book about hiking and how it helps me. And I was like, no, I want to write a book that actually gets people out and gives them the information and gives them the inspiration through photos. So I waited and I waited, and eventually I found a great publisher in Scotland, Black and White, who do all the kind of hiking Munro books. They have a great, you know, they know what they're doing, basically. Yeah, and it took about 2.5 years. It was a lot of work.
And what is it about hiking for you?
Oh, just give me a break. Gives me a break from my phone, gives me a break from my head. Mm-hmm. You know, oftentimes you'll be thinking ahead, oh, all the things you need to do tomorrow, or, oh, I could have done that better yesterday, whatever it is. Okay. Whereas hiking just makes, well, it makes me be in the present. For me, it's been a fantastic way to meet friends in my 30s. You know, I've met so many people from the hike life.
You and I do the bits of the Camino every year. You're very conscious that there generations and centuries of people have walked there before you, taken their stories up and down those mountains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and had their struggles and, challenges in life.
And that has meant something to them in their lives to get out into the fresh air, to have the chance to chat or to walk in silence.
Yeah.
Because a couple of the times, even in our walk, and we do it regularly in our walks too, Mary, that you just... just fall into silence in your own head.
I can't imagine both of you being silent.
Not if we stand beside each other. No, they do try to keep us separated now.
We share ourselves around. Roz, you've got a very holistic approach to life with the work that you do with food and the animals. And we've got your two dogs here this afternoon as our special guests and the hiking. So how do you reconcile all of those lovely aspects of life with having to be so involved in social media?
I don't think I found the balance yet of this. I do think the thing that has helped me the most is actually just aging. I think I'm able to look at social media and realize that I don't want to be living my life for social media. I just want to be sharing my life on social media, the bits that I'm happy to share. And I think in my 20s, I got into a really bad habit of living my life through the lens and living it to what would be good, what would people want to see, rather than just doing things I enjoy and sharing them if I want. Mm-hmm. So I really try to strike that balance. As I get older, my priorities have changed. Mm-hmm. And I just think in general, I'm very, very lucky in that things that calm me down, I have around me. So my partner is very chilled, really kind of helps to settle me. I have lots of friends and a community that I can go out and explore the outdoors with. I have my two dogs that, you know, every time in work when there's a kind of a little bit of a stressful time, they're at my feet. So I can just go, everything's going to be okay, isn't it, guys? You know, so I think I've been very, maybe I've been the architect of having lots of things around me that kind of help me stay level.
But you need it, don't you? I mean, it's part of your job. You're an entrepreneur and you're, you know, promoting the work that you do. And social media is the way to do it, isn't it?
Yeah. And social media, look, it can be really hard. Uh-huh. But I think you just have to remember it's not the be all and end all. I always try to like put into perspective when I start to get a little bit like high about social media of like, oh God, I have to do this. And like, this isn't doing well. And like looking at numbers that I thankfully did a lot of work when I was recovering from an eating disorder, not to be defined by numbers. So it's definitely helped me with my with my job and social media to be like, it's not who you are. You're just putting things on there. Mm-hmm. And it could be gone tomorrow. You're not in control of it. So don't have that really deep attachment to it.
And you get bad reactions sometimes as well as good, because all I see is the good reaction.
Yeah. Look, anything. Oh my God, I could put up a photo of my dog lying on that blanket there and someone could be like, she could be allergic to that blanket. What are you doing? You know what I mean? Anything. So like everything, there'll be a bad reaction to absolutely everything. And I think that's made me realize that you will just never be able to please everyone. And I used to be the type of person who would reply to every single person, get them to retry like me. Now I just, I don't care.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? I'm sorry. But
so what would you say if you were talking to an audience of young people in their teens, what would you tell them was your biggest challenge?
I think my biggest challenge as a teenager was battling with the idea of being yourself or trying to fit in. As a teenager, I just really, really wanted to be like popular and I really wanted to fit in. And I would just do anything to, you know, be friends with a certain group of girls. And I lost so many parts of myself while trying to do that. Example, like giving up sports that I liked because none of them played them, or, you know, just trying to be so cool that you just weren't a nice person. Do you get me? So I think there's this whole element as a teenager that we always feel like we want to like fit in, but actually standing out is going to be like the best thing for you. So just always just know that if you stand out, just be yourself. People who like that will just gravitate towards you, and you don't have to be with the cool group in school because maybe, you know, that's just not for you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I was very lucky. I did find a really great group of school friends probably late in school, like in fourth or fifth year. But it took me a while because I was kind of like constantly just trying to be different people and morphing into different people. So that would be my big piece of advice to teenagers.
Be yourself.
Yeah, and just stop trying to fit in.
You've mentioned your partner, Roz, and you got engaged recently. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you so much.
On the cliffs of Moher.
Not on the hill at Slieve,
no
more.
No, I know. I think it was more the fact that, like, he knows I love a good sunset.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
I love a good sunrise. I love a good sunset. So we were, and it was, it's tricky at the moment because I work weekends and he works Monday to Friday. So, you know, to find a day together is really hard. And I just remember he was like, where do you want to go? We have a day off together. And I went on my weather apps and I was like, look, Claire is looking like the most solid weather day. So let's go there. So it wasn't like he planned the location. He was like, right, we're going to Claire.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I love the Cliffs of Moher. Mm. Every time I go to Clare, I go there for sunset. It's like my thing. I'll go and get some cake or I'll get a flask of tea and I'll just sit there, even if it's by myself.
Mm.
I think it's just magnificent, you know?
Funny enough, a place that we think is beautiful too, and we've done quite a few times, is Slieve League.
Oh, Slieve League is amazing.
That magnificence. So now tell us about the romance from the Cliffs of Moher. So, I interrupted you.
Yeah. So we kind of got to a nice spot. And thankfully, there wasn't actually that many people around considering it was summer. And he was like, oh, I'll be back in a second. I just need to make a call. So I didn't think anything of that because he works 24/7. He's always talking to people in different countries. And he was actually gone off to call my dad.
Oh, to do the formal thing.
Yeah. And he knew. If he asked my dad any sooner, he would have ruined it. Because my dad cannot keep a secret at all. So he asked him like at the very last minute, and my dad and him are like best friends. So he was like, of course. Like, I mean, my dad talks to him way more than he talks to me.
Mm-hmm.
They talk to each other every single day. I'll get home and I'm like, you know, he'll be telling me everything that's happening at home. And I'm like, the hell? My dad hasn't called me in two days. Now, I speak to my dad quite a lot, but he is the favourite child. I will say that. He really is. And then he got down on one knee and asked me. And you know what? We're both actually considering, you know, I'm on social media. We're both kind of, you know, a little bit private. So like my first thing was like, is anyone watching? You know? But there was just kind of a group of tourists that were not paying any attention whatsoever. And it was a nice kind of like intimate private moment. Yeah.
And were you surprised?
I was because I think he was so calm. I was like, you're not nervous? No, all my friends said their partners were nervous. Why aren't you nervous? You know, like any of my friends who got engaged, they kind of had this thing where their partner was like, he was acting real weird that day.
Okay.
Whereas Zach wasn't. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, he really kept his nerves. He was like, yeah, but she's been going out forever. Like, that is true. That is true. Looking back, I'm like, oh yeah, there was a few weird things. For example, my sister was also in Clare that day with her kids and her husband. And I knew that they were going to be there because I was like, oh, we'll go to Clare because my sister's also there. So we can hang out on the beach with my nephews for the day as well. He was like, cool. But on the way to Cliffs of Moher, we passed them and they were beeping. They were like, oh my God. And she rang me and went, where are you off to? And I went, we're going to Cliffs of Moher. And he went, don't ask him to come. And I went, that's a bit rude, isn't it? I was like, okay. And I was just thinking, yeah, I don't want to bring my nephews to the cliffs. She was kind of like a bit, you know, oh, would you not like just come meet us for a drink or something? And I was like, no, we'll see you tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking in my head, I was like, that's a little bit rude, but okay. But obviously he was like, he didn't want an audience.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And he was right.
He was right. Yeah.
You were right. It was
to surprise her the next day in person.
Mm-hmm. And have you got wedding plans?
Nothing.
Really?
I know. And like everyone keeps asking me, they're like, Roz, if you don't start now, it's going to be like 2026. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. I'm very, you know, a lot of people, they grow up and they have this idea of how they'd like a wedding. And already before they've even met someone, they're like, I want to get married here and I want this dress. And, you know, these are who my bridesmaids will meet. I've never had that.
And yet you were surrounded by fashion. You would have thought that was all pretty much organized in your mind.
I do think maybe growing, like my very first photo shoot when I was 18 was a wedding catalogue. So I've tried on so many wedding dresses. I think I'm just, couldn't be arsed, to be honest. You know what I mean? And you would think that maybe that had given me an idea of what's going to suit me. Oh, don't remember one of them. So I think because I did it so much, it's not a special thing, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, I'm looking forward to, you know, having a party, but I don't think I'd go for the big traditional, like, wedding day vibe.
With the big dress?
No. Well, look, I don't know. I see, this is the thing.
This could change, Ross.
All I know is Myla and Wilco are going to be bringing the rings.
Yeah.
On the
nice.
Eyes. Yeah. Yeah, it's the only
start
thing.
Start the training now.
I know. Start the training.
On the morning that I stepped out of my back door to walk the, whatever it was, the 100 yards to the chapel in the village of Restrever, yeah. Our family dog took a flying leap at me and left his four paw marks
on your dress?
On the front of the dress. Yeah. I ran into the pub because we lived over a pub, ran into the pub and my aunt was still there. She was just about to come out, grabbed an old, you know, one of those blue and white jiffy cloths.
Oh, yeah.
And tried to get the worst of it off.
Oh, no.
But I still have the dress and I have it packed away and I never got it dry clean. Yeah. And the four paw marks are still on
way.
It. Yeah. So just warning you now.
Yeah.
There's my piece of advice for you on the day of your wedding.
Look, it wouldn't be a normal day if I wasn't covered in some dog hair or a paw print somewhere. And thankfully, they're both white. So they'd kind of blend in
a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, they heard you. They're getting up.
There's a question that we ask everybody, yes. Roz, and I'm interested to hear your answer. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be very interesting. If you could change one thing, either in your own life or in other people's lives, what would it be?
I'm going to give a very Miss Universe, Miss World answer, but I do think most people in Ireland would probably relate to this right now. Any child in Gaza, I'd give them their life back. And I know you're like, oh, come on. Like, you know, it's very, seeing everything that's going on over in Gaza kind of puts into perspective that we're so lucky we have so much. And, you know, there's kids out there who have literally lost everything, lost
including
their parents.
Their lives by
their
the
lives.
Thousand.
Yeah. So I think there's no really other answer right now. I can't think of any one or me or anything that could want more right now.
How would you describe your life right now?
Very lucky. Yeah. I do think for so long in my 20s, I kind of wanted so much, like always wanted more. And I always, you know, kind of, you know, you'd meet someone and they were so content with their life. And you're like, how do you not constantly want more? I think I've just kind of come to an age or a stage in my life where I'm very content. And that thing of like looking for the next thing is I'm actually appreciating what I have right now. So yeah, lucky.
And so another episode of Changing Times draws to a close.
Thanks to everyone who's listening, all those loyal listeners out there tuning in week after week. We really appreciate it.
And you know, our listenership is growing all the time. We are very grateful to all of you for pressing play and for joining us.
We also are very grateful to Kildare County Council for all their support with Changing Times, the Alan Wood Conversations. Big thank you again to our researcher, Anne-Marie Staunton, and our producer, Enda Grace.
And don't forget to tell your friends and colleagues about us. And please do subscribe. Give us a review wherever you get your podcasts.
So until the next time, have a great week. Bye for now.
Changing Times, the Alan Wood Conversations.
Proudly supported by Kildare County Council.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.